Welcome to the Repurpose Your Career podcast, brought to you by Career Pivot. This podcast is where those of us in the second half of life come together to discuss how to repurpose our careers for the 21st century. Come listen to career experts give you proven strategies. Listen to people like you tell their stories on how they repurpose their careers. And finally, get your questions answered. Your host, Mark Miller, has made six career pivots over the last 30 years. He understands this is not about jumping out of the frying pan into a fire, but rather to create a plan where you make clear, actionable steps or pivots to a better future career. Are you ready to repurpose your career?
Welcome to episode 24 of the Repurpose Your Career podcast. My name is Mark Miller, and I'll be your host every Monday for a discussion on what it's like to repurpose your career. I want to thank everyone who has written a review for the show. It's reviews that get us greater visibility. And I want to read another review that said, its title is Excellent Usable Info. Loved listening to this podcast. Excellent info that matched the description, surpassed my expectations. Thanks for the great work. This was written by M11395. Thank you very much, M11395. Great name. You like the show, please write a review. If you're unsure how to write a review, please go to careerpivot.com/review for a detailed instruction on how to write an iTunes review. Today, I have the honor to interview Mike Martin, who's a former client who's made some very, very interesting pivots. Let me read you his bio. Mike Martin made a career pivot after 30 years in industrial sales, first as a volunteer instructor and substitute teacher. Mike realized that instructing had a very fulfilling feel to it. Night college courses and teaching seemed the next logical step. This eventually became a full-time aviation school at a college in Killeen, Texas, then 2 years of rail operations instructing train operators on the new light rail extensions on the Harris County Metro line. Wanting very much to use his pilot experience and passion for aviation, Mike joined Dart Drones in 2016 as a commercial drone pilot instructor. Yes, you heard it. He is a drone pilot instructor. Dart is growing, and Mike is also helping Dart develop specialized curriculum aimed at target industries. And even he got to write a blog piece on the FAA knowledge test given to pilot candidates. Mike is very happy now and says he has found a good place and the future looks bright. By the way, Dart Drones, if you may have seen them, because they were on Shark Tank. At the end of this, I'll point you to the episode in the show notes. So I hope you enjoy the episode. Mike, I have read your bio to my audience before we got on the call. Could you tell them about who the real Mike is?
Well, the real Mike is a guy who probably had his early influence with anything big, noisy, and loud is something I wanted to do. And that was usually something moving. Having that conversation with yourself and your friends when you were little, like, what do you want to be when you grow up? And there's the usual policeman, the doctor, the fireman. I always wanted to be a train engineer or a pilot. And I went back and forth with train engineer and pilot. But, you know, it's always I wanted to be in charge of something, making something move, something important. And that kind of led me in my adolescent years into taking flying lessons. My aspirations were to be a big airline pilot. That didn't happen. But that's kind of the direction I was moving in the first half of my life.
Your bio says you were in industrial sales for 30 years. So it's kind of like that's what you did in your first half of life. Tell us about how you got into industrial sales. And then finally, what got you out of it?
What got me into it continued on into my college days. I got an associate's degree in aerospace technology. That didn't really give me a lot of flying experience. So I had to keep on with the flying lessons. So naturally, I just had, you know, warehouse jobs and things like that to keep me going, keep me into the flying lessons. I got out of Buffalo, New York, where I was originally residing, and moved to Dallas, Texas. I was doing a lot of work with parts and machining and things like that, but it was always came down back down to parts. I was very good with parts, cataloging, organizing, that kind of thing. But, you know, it wasn't exciting. And my cousin sat me down one day and goes, you know, Mike, you are good with parts, but you know what? Instead of counting the little parts, you should be selling those parts. Man, you're a good guy. You'd make a good salesman. And that's how I got into industrial sales. It was actually a vendor that we used at Halliburton, where I was working in Dallas, Texas. I liked their product, and I pitched that to the owner of the company. I liked the product, how it was organized. Your orders were always correct when they came in. And he says, how'd you like to be a salesman for our electric company? I said, sure. I had a couple of months of working in the main office and working with a couple of salesmen. And then they said, well, we've got a territory in Austin, Texas open. Why don't you get out there and sell like crazy? And I did. I really enjoyed it for the first several years. It was lots of fun. I could walk up to the shop people, shake hands with them, check their inventory out, and deliver right off the truck, which I had bought, maintained. That was my expense. And it was going great for a few years. And then the late 80s, early 90s came along, and I call that the year of the National Buying Consortium. And this is when all people from all over the world came in and started to make changes in companies, try to make them more successful, make the buying process more streamlined, take the people out of it and put more computers and machines. And it was getting harder and harder to get to the person who was the decision maker. I still had some pretty good customers, especially out in the oil patch, you know, the good old boys. But the companies that I was dealing with where I could walk in the back door and take the order, now I had to go to the front office. And then I had to wait on the telephone, and the competition was getting to me more. And eventually we had to get bigger and better trucks. Our commissions were cut, our expenses were more. And then the two lines crossed, I said, that's it. I got to find something else to do because this is starting to give me an ulcer.
By the way, that is very common. I run into a lot of folks in B2B sales when it used to be fun because it was a relationship game. And it was all about relationships. Well, like you just said, it's not about relationships anymore.
That's true. Yeah. I still run into customers I had in the store, and they said, man, you were the best guy we had until we had to stop buying from you and buy from XYZ Corporation out of their catalog. I don't regret doing that. I just wish I'd focused a little more on the aviation. Second half of the life, it's starting to come back around. The light's coming back out. The clouds are parting, and I'm seeing that again.
So what are you doing now?
Right now, I'm working with a company called Dart Drones out of Scranton, Pennsylvania. Some of your listeners may have seen our CEO, Abby Specker, on Shark Tank. She actually got $300,000 from Mark Cuban for 10% of the company, and she's going to take that and start building the curriculum, hopefully be training more specialized things like fire departments, search and rescue, out of that little endeavor she made.
Cool. Are you doing anything else other than training for Dart Drones?
Yeah. What's really cool, after the Shark Tank picked up, the training quest to pick up, giving more classes on the weekends. It's where I do most of the training. They are going to put me into some of the more specialized things, so I'll have some weekday gigs. I also started working with another company called Drone Ascent, and they're going to be giving me jobs. Haven't gotten one yet, but we're supposed to start working on, you know, more of a commercial type base, not a flight training type thing, but more jobs like real estate, videography, search and rescue, training fire departments. Well, not much as training, but, you know, working for them, doing as an on-call operator, any kind of construction work, cell tower inspection. We're going to be able to do that.
You've made a couple of pivots. Can you tell me about the first?
I'd say the first pivot came was I was looking at something you'd written called a moment of clarity.
Yes.
Yeah, it was a moment of clarity I had doing a few sales gigs after the big electrical one that was starting to sort of cave in on me. And I really discovered it when I did some volunteer work for a program called Science Olympiad at one of the local schools. I had extensive training in meteorology, you know, being a pilot and that. So I took that and taught the kids how to work the weather problems that the different competitions were handing out to them. They had to do tests and exams, and they were in need of that at the school at the time. I stuck with that for 5 years until the money got cut off for that. That was a shame. But, you know, doing that, working with the kids, I discovered that I kind of had a knack to teach and instruct and get results. So I started substitute teaching and decided going back to school would be a good thing, too. So I thought, I could get my bachelor's degree in teaching. So I set out to do that and went the alternative certification course through a private company. And just as that happened, it was when the big teacher layoff in the state of Texas occurred. And I was already, I went through all the training and I went out to the interview, and it looked like the whole world emptied out in the parking lots of these schools when they had their open houses. So there was a lot of competition and a lot of ex-teachers out there. And I really got the feeling they didn't want a guy like me because, you know, I guess I could stand up to some of the administrators.
By the way, Mike, when I taught high school, I claimed that they don't want guys over 40. Exactly what you said. We don't do what we're told.
Sure, he sure did tell us, you know, that, oh, we need men in school. The kids need a male influence in school. But then when it came around, when the rubber was going to meet the road, I didn't get any traction.
You decided not to go into teaching. So what did you do? If I remember correctly, you went back and got your bachelor's degree, what, in aviation?
You know, I finished the teacher certification, but I was still, you know, trying to get the bachelor's degree. And I thought, what's the quickest way to get one? And I thought, take that aviation, that old AS degree that you got back way back when, and go back into flying, which I did. I found an aviation course up in Killeen in a 4-year school. And lo and behold, I got the bachelor's degree in 2009. And well, here I am now with an aviation bachelor's degree, and I'm an old guy, and you know, I'm not going to go to the regional airlines. I still didn't have enough flight training to do that yet. I still had to get some more ratings and stuff, and it gets expensive. So I kind of sat there and pondered what I was going to do. I took a job at an airport and at an FBO. That's a fixed base operator. The work there was not very much pay, and it was exciting to be around the planes, and I was a little bit more educated than most of the people there, and I didn't find it very friendly either, so I left that. Guess what? I went back into another little sales job for a while just to make a little bit of the ends meet and have something to do while I was still pondering my future.
And you ended up where?
What could a pilot do who really didn't want to go into the regional airlines? And I started looking at other modes of transportation, you know, thinking wings, wheels, and keels. Maybe I could be a boat captain out in the Gulf of Mexico. Who knows? But I found an opening for train operators in Houston, Texas. And I went down there, not really expecting to be hired. And I passed their test, and they called me back for an interview. Well, I aced the interview really well. About 2 weeks later, I get a letter that I'm going to start train operating school. I didn't expect to pass that interview, but I did a very good job. I guess I'm going to be a train operator. And I looked at my wife, and she looked at me and said, "You're going to move to Houston and drive trains?" I said, "I'd like to do that, but I know that's impossible." And you know what she said? She said, "Go right ahead." I went to Houston, looked around at the apartment situation, and said, "Nope." And I bought a used RV trailer, and I put it in a really swanky RV resort, 6 minutes from where I was going to operate the trains. Then came train operator school, 10 weeks of intense training on the rails, the rules of the road, signals, troubleshooting the trains, which came in very handy because nothing ever goes perfect. After 10 weeks, I got my certificate and I was out washing trains because the routes were only for the guys that had a little tenure there. But it wouldn't take long, they said. Maybe a year and you'll have a regular route. So I found a part called IT, which is integrated testing. And what you do there is you take a train when it's delivered, and we were getting brand new trains almost weekly, and you burn it in, just like a server system or whatever, because after all, these new LRVs are highly automated, sophisticated rolling computers, if you will, and you drive them up and down the tracks at the wee hours of the morning, try and break them, try and make the systems fail. And we did a lot, and we got improvements on the trains, and after about 500 miles of no problems, that train was commissioned, and I burnt in a lot of trains. And then eventually, I got the opportunity to help the crews that were building out the new rail routes. And so I would run a test train up and down, and I would pit the train against the signal systems, the traffic signal systems, see if we could make those things fail. And we were out there on those rail lines before they opened up many, many hours trying to get those things fine-tuned and ready to go for the public. And finally, the big day came, and I got to run the first PR train, you know, all the city officials, and I took them all the way down from one end to the other and then back. And that was really exciting. It's kind of like the culmination of everything I got to do with Houston Rail. And it was kind of like an affirmation that, hey, we love the work you did. Why don't you go ahead and take these special people down? It was kind of a nice little reward at the end. But, you know, after that was all said and done, the rail lines were open. There was nothing else going on. And I felt like it was time to return home to Austin and my lovely wife, and thank her for the 2 years I got to spend out there and learn a whole lot of things. The thing it did most, it gave me a great deal of confidence. And also, I got to train new rail operators and some of the old operators on the new lines in the city and you know, where they ran and what kind of signals you're going to see, and basically stand behind them for a couple of trips and then sign them off, just like a flight instructor or a Czech airman would sign off a new airline pilot. So I was kind of getting a little satisfaction out of that. And then when I returned home to Austin, I looked around a little bit and I discovered that there was quite a bit of activity in the drone world, which I am now.
That whole drone space has taken off very fast. If you talked drones 5 years ago, people would have looked at you and said, what? You mean in Iraq and in Afghanistan, they got drones there.
But we're not talking about a Predator or a Reaper. No. We're talking about something that weighs less than 50 pounds and more than 250 grams is the kind of drones that that the FAA has deemed big enough to need a registration. And some training on.
Those didn't even exist 5 years ago. It's all of that has turned around very fast. So from driving the trains, what did you learn about yourself?
I could take on something that was big, something that took an enormous amount of responsibility, not only for the passengers on board, but for the general public, you know, outside too. And I could convey what was going on in that cab to somebody who'd never operated that train before, and in a matter of hours, have them running that train up and down the line in a competent way.
I know from our discussions when you were driving trains, you were having a blast.
I was.
I remember you telling me at that interview that you took that they made you take the seat apart and do some strange things with it. And then they walked you out on the rail yard. And once you were in the rail yard, you walked across all this gravel, which they wanted to see whether you could actually physically do it, get up in a train. And I remember you still telling me, I'm going to get to drive trains. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, there was kind of an elation there. That was the moment I knew I might get this chance. I wasn't sure because of the distance between that, man, this guy, we're going to pull him out of Austin. He's not going to make it. He's going to go back to Austin. But no, they did. So it was rather a nice surprise to be able to do that. I'll tell you what, that industrial sales experience at the end when that guy took me out in the yard, I was talking very technical with him about what I knew about the train already and about the different circuit breakers in the panels and the wiring and how that was fastened to the ceiling. And he even said, I remember, he says, I think we're going to be talking to you pretty soon. You know, he's kind of a gruff guy, but he liked me. And we've been friends ever since, too. Great guy.
Well, it's interesting. I just finished a podcast talking about you and Elizabeth, and I've got another client I'm going to have on the podcast. And all of this repurposing is you either repurpose your skill set or you repurpose your industry knowledge. In your case, this was all about being a pilot and taking, like I said, pilots, very detailed oriented, they're checklist oriented, they're very safety conscious. And that all plays, like you said, that all plays completely into go drive and train.
Correct.
Right? So what you did was you took your pilot skills and you applied them into this new world. And now you've since taken that and you learned the fact that you could train. And in fact, you enjoyed training and you were teaching kids, but now you're training adults, which is different, because I can speak from experience on that one. All of this was transferable and someone gave you a chance. When you started looking around for flying drones, was there any barriers for you to be able to train people on drones or fly drones yourself?
Well, the first one was you need to have about 25 to 50 hours on something sophisticated, like they call them prosumer products. That's where you take it right out of the box. It's a very sophisticated piece of equipment. It's not a toy. It's got some sophisticated hardware in it that holds it steady, keeps it at the right altitude. You might have to do some things. You might have to tweak it a little bit out in the field to make it do what you want, to get the camera to pan slow enough or fast enough, or make the batteries last a little longer. So you have to be conscious of systems. When I first talked to a few companies that were doing aerial inspection, they said, you probably need to get a DJI Phantom drone and not that little toy. I start out with a little toy drone. In fact, I'm looking at it right now. It's sitting on the shelf. I haven't flown it since I got the job with the DART drones. But that little $50 drone got the whole thing going for me. And then I went out and purchased a Phantom drone, Phantom product, DJI product, and got the 25 hours in. And I went back to that company a few months later, and they were really, really trying to influence me to get on board with them. And after I looked at, you know, what they have to do being deployed in the field for 3 weeks in a trailer, and I thought, you know, that's not exactly what I want to do. That's something maybe a younger guy would want to do, but you know, I kind of like being around home. And then I found this DART drones. I kept seeing ads popping up all over because, you know, I've been Googling drones, and they DART drones, come and train with us. We're the leading company in the United States. We're cutting the way in drone training. So I found an Indeed job alert one time for DART drones, and I called the number on the thing and found a little bit more about DART drones, and I applied for the job, and then I got Skype interviewed 3 times. Never had an interview like that, but when I finally met the CEO, Abby, I sold her with my Science Olympiad experience and how much I liked training young people, especially the girls. I really like to see the girls get into the technology, and she really liked that. I figured she would, because she's quite an entrepreneur, and she went to a school and trained with other people. And it was mostly a man's world, but she's a big fan for girl power too. And I think that really was the key that where we clicked.
Is there anything else you want to tell the listeners about your journey?
Yeah. First and foremost, even if it seems a little wacky or crazy and it seems like a dream, never give up. Try it out. Look at it. There may be one avenue, might be not your thing, but you might find another avenue, like the training part of DART drones. The first few jobs I looked at were not quite for me, but just keep looking at the industry. I think what we call we work the industry deep and then we work it wide.
I always claim that when we want to make a change, we think mm-hmm. we know what it's going to be like, and the answer is it's never like the way we think it's going to be. And you've got to be open to what's available. Things happen when they happen. You have to be comfortable with kind of, you know, shaking and going with the flow, which is kind of what you did.
You know, you hear about something. Wow, I want to work, like, say, for example, I want to work for IBM when I grow up, or I want to work for IBM. And then you get to IBM and you find out it's really not all that it's cut up to be.
I call that MSU syndrome. Make mm-hmm. stuff up. We make stuff up in our heads. And by the way,
that's right.
You can take stuff and replace it with another four-letter word.
We have these expectations, how it's going to be. And then when we get there the first day, we start to feel a little strange because this isn't what I thought it was going to be like in my head. It either gets better or it gets worse, or it's just very boring.
I want to be respectful of your time. So if people wanted to reach out to talk to you, how could they get a hold of you?
Oh, they could email me at mpm660@gmail.com.
Mike, I really wanted you on this podcast because your journey is quite extraordinary. And I think you know that your journey has had a lot of ups and downs and has been You've gone back and forth. You've been willing to take risks, and you've been willing to go say, geez, let's follow my passion, even though logically it doesn't sound like it would make any sense. Kind of like you applying for a job down in Houston. Why the heck would they hire you? Well, because they wanted you, because you were a pilot and you wanted to be there. Thank you for being on this show. I'm hoping you will have inspired some people.
Well, I hope so too. And like I said, never give up on your dreams. They might change a little bit, but never give up.
Thank you, Mike.
You're very welcome, Mark. It's great talking to you.
I hope you enjoyed that interview. As you can see, Mike is a real interesting guy. I've been working on and off with Mike for several years, and his journey has taken a lot of twists and turns. Mike is very persistent and has a very supportive spouse. Please do not discount either of those attributes. Links to the Dark Groans Shark Tank episode and to my original post about Mike's pivot to driving on the Houston Metro line will be included in the show notes. Thank you for listening all the way to the end of the Repurpose Your Career podcast. You will find all the show notes at careerpivot.com/episode-24. Please hop over to careerpivot.com and subscribe to get updates on this podcast and all the other happenings at Career Pivot. I publish a blog post with show notes every Tuesday morning. If you subscribe to the Career Pivot blog, you will receive the Career Pivot Insights email every Sunday, which includes a link to this podcast. You can also subscribe to the podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, or Google Play. Please take a moment to go leave a review. If you're not sure how to write an iTunes review, please go to careerpivot.com/review. Lastly, if you have any questions you would like me to answer on this podcast, please go to careerpivot.com and click on the Contact Me link at the top of the page. Or there's a speaker pipe option where you can leave me a voice message on the right-hand side of the screen. Just click it and make sure your microphone is open and I will get your message. Every month, I'm dedicating a whole episode to answering your questions. I hope to see you next Monday for another episode of Repurpose Your Career podcast.
Welcome to another round of Drawing Board or Miro Board. Today, we talk brainstorms with UX designer Brian. Let's go. First question. You thought you'd see everyone's idea in the team brainstorm, but you've got a grand total of one. Drawing Board or Miro Board?
Drawing Board, right? Because in Miro, the team can add ideas now or later. And with Privacy Mode, we can keep them anonymous until they're good to share.
Correct. Next, you need the best way to explain your idea, but all you have is a few sticky notes. Drawing Board or Miro Board?
Drawing Board, because, you know, in Miro, I could record videos, add text, images, links, and digital sticky notes, of course, present my thoughts the way I want.
Right again! Now, you're looking for a past idea you thought was just genius. Only you could find... Oh, there it is! Drawing Board or...
Miro! All our finished and unfinished work lives in one place.
And he's won.
Join over 60 million people getting ideas noticed in Miro Brainstorms. Get your first three boards for free at Miro.com. That's Miro.com.